Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Jim Rogan. Jim's the Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property and the Director of the Patent and Trademark Office. And joining us in our conversation is Tom Romeo.
Jim, can you explain to us the different rules and regulations regarding patents, trademarks, service marks, and copyright?
Yes. I'm going to do it not from a legal perspective, and so I'm going to just do it, if you'll allow me, just fairly generally, so that just give your listeners an idea. Essentially, patents are issued for inventions or particular methods. It's essentially somebody is creating a process or an invention. It could be anything from the Wright brothers plane to one patent that issued before my time for Amazon one-click method of doing business. But if you just allow me the generalization, patents basically relate to inventions. Marks, whether trademarks or service marks, are basically a signal to the public that this was made by a certain company. For instance, Coca-Cola, that logo is a registered trademark. And so that sends a signal to somebody who's thirsty that if you buy the beverage with that logo, you have a certain expectation that it's made by a reputable company. You know what it's going to taste like. It's a mark that through over the years this business has developed the loyalty of customers, and the customers have developed a faith and loyalty in who's made it. And so it's basically it's an identification that something is being made by a certain person. Back in Revolutionary War days, Paul Revere was a silversmith, and Paul Revere would put a little mark on the cups and so forth that he made as a signal to people who were out there purchasing that if you wanted one made by Paul Revere, you looked for that particular mark. And so that was an ancient expression of a mark. A copyright basically is what attaches now to an author's creation. Back in the old days, I think you actually had to register with the Copyright Office to enforce a copyright. I don't think that's the law anymore. If you write a song, if you write a book, if you write a play, you're not going to trademark it because it's not a logo. You're not going to patent it because it's not an invention. And so you would seek protection for your song or your movie script by way of copyright. And so that's a very broad generalization of the difference between the three.
What are some of the current trends in the number and variety of application for patents or trademarks or copyrights that you see today?
The trends are good in the sense that we get an awful lot of them. We see the U.S. government gets an awful lot of them in all three of those areas. That's good for technology and for invention and for creativity. It tells us that inventors are still inventing and creative people are still creating. From a practical perspective, it's hurting the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to be able to accomplish our mission in a way in which our applicants deserve to know that we're doing it. And here's why. We have about 35, I'll just take patents for an example. We have about 3,500 patent examiners. We get about 350,000 applications per year. And because as the years go by, applications become longer, they become far more technical and far more complex as technology develops at the speed of light. It's taking longer and it's harder, and we're developing a backlog. 22 years ago, U.S. News and World Report, 1981, they did a story on the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and they said it's actually so sluggish and cumbersome, it's hurting technology. And the reason they came to that conclusion is it was taking about 2 years to examine a patent, and the backlog was about 75,000 files. Now the backlog is about 450,000 files, and the average is 2 years still, but in some critical technologies it's 3, 4, and 5 years, and it's estimated to go up to an average of 3 to 5 years by 2008 if we don't do something about it. And so in a very real sense, we become victims of our own success. If you walk through the office of the director of the Patent and Trademark Office, up on the walls, all through the suite of executive offices is lovely artwork framed on the wall, but it's not Picasso or Renoir or Gauguin. The artwork that frames the walls of my office is old patent application artwork from the early 1800s. Inventions that we take for granted now, but at their time, changed the face of the world. Everything from McCormick's plow to the doorknob to the bullet to the tin can, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. The Wright brothers' airplane, Edison's light bulb, and so forth. What's interesting, aside from the historical artifact nature of the artwork, what's interesting about these magnificent inventions that changed the quality of life for humanity in their day is that you can frame them on the wall today. They were basically a sketch, McCormick's plow. It's a sketch of a plow and a little description. This is a plow, digs a hole, you plant the seeds, it keeps the furrow straight. I mean, it makes farming better. It's a sketch, a little description. The USPTO date stamped it, and there you go. Now we get applications come in, genomic patents, biotech patent applications. They come in on CD-ROMs. They have sometimes the equivalent of literally millions of pages of data. And that's just one application. And if we get an application with 100 independent claims or 500 independent claims, sometimes 1,000 and 5,000 or more independent claims, many of those have to be treated like individual inventions within that one application. You take those applications, multiply those by 350,000, and throw on top of that the exponential increase of technology and difficulty and complexity, you can see that it keeps us from being able to do in a timely, it hurts our ability to do a timely and qualitative job. Because now the rush, from a bureaucratic perspective, is to get through these applications quickly. And the applications often don't lend themselves to quickness or speed. They require a lot of expertise and they require a lot of time, and the faster we move, the more likely it is that we let something fall through the cracks. And if we let a mistake out the door, and we do, we let mistakes out the door, that has significant implications. If you've just invented the new widget, Tom, and if you're waiting for this piece of paper from our office that says what? That says you will have for a limited period of time exclusivity in your invention. You've invented this thing. Now you want to go to market with it. Well, you found some financiers, you found some venture capitalists, you found people that want to help you out, but they're asking you, do you have a patent yet? Let us know when you get a patent. So finally the big day comes, you get that piece of paper, it's got a seal on it, and so everybody invests in your company, you build the factories, you hire the employees, people quit their jobs to come to work for you, you get the production going, you bust your chops for a few years with this product. Now people are developing a sense of comfort in your product, and they're like Coca-Cola, you know, they know what they're getting, and now you've spent all of this time and resources to build up your name and the product identification, you put market resources into it, things are looking great. And somebody knocks on your door and says, you know that patent that USPTO gave you? Well, they gave me one 2 weeks earlier, and looks like they let yours fall through the door because yours infringes on mine. I'm first in time, and therefore I'll take 80% of all your earnings as my licensing fee, or else I'm going to shut you down. That has significant consequences. There are significant consequences if we make a mistake. And so what I have attempted to do is pull back from the old model that we currently are operating under, where we do our best and, we'll do a quality survey at the end of the pipeline and, hopefully we keep the mistakes down. I've tried to bring more of a business model to the operation of the USPTO in every sense except one. At the end of the day, a business, of course, exists to turn a profit. We don't want to turn a nickel profit. We want to be able to charge for patents what they to the extent that we can get to a linear cost, what it really costs to do the job, what it really costs for us to hire more examiners, to train them, to retain them, to develop more of a market model where the more work we do for somebody, the more we charge them. The less work we do, the less we charge them. Right now, it really doesn't cost you that much more if you send us an application with one claim or 1,000 claims. And so the temptation from a filing perspective is just throw as much stuff against the wall, see what sticks. Maybe something will, maybe something won't. So we want to bring market incentive in all areas to try to bring some sanity and then let us be able to do the job from a quality perspective. The focus politically tends to be on pendency, how long it takes. And the temptation for a director, for any director, is to focus heavily on how long it takes because that can be measured. And quality is far more important than pendency, particularly if we're making a mistake on your patent. But quality is something that really doesn't lend itself to measurement. And so in politics, of course, we always want to take the path of least resistance and claim victory somewhere. And so I'm trying to change the culture now to an office that is dominated more on a quality focus, with the understanding that in order to enhance quality, we may have to slow the process down a little bit. But that's uniformly from – I've never had an applicant ever tell me, if I have to choose between quicker pendency and better quality, I'll take quicker pendency. Everybody understands if we make a mistake on their application, it can be a death knell for them. And so we're shifting that paradigm to focus on quality because it's the most important.
That's a good stopping point. Come back in a few minutes as we continue our discussion about management with Jim Rogan of PTO. How is PTO handling the issues spotlighted in the president's management agenda? We'll ask Jim for his perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.